Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 86 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are going on, to meet the people that make theater happen. You can find all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other fine podcast streaming services. And if you have a spare 30 seconds, please rate and review the podcast to help us be more discoverable to listeners who haven't heard about us yet. And now for this week's podcast. Matt and I bumped into our next guest at the National Theater last week, you know, as we do in our business, and our guest told us what he was up to with his theater company, and Matt and I were both just blown away with what we were hearing, so we thought we'd bring you a chat with him instead of us just telling you all about it. Alex Hassel is a veteran of the London stage, and Curtain Call have covered two shows with him in the shape of Henry V at the Barbican and Death of a Salesman at the Noel Coward Theater, which you can find in our book, Curtain Call, A Year Backstage in London Theater. Little plug there. But before that, Alex's career and the people he's worked with is like a who's who of the industry, including directors John Dove, Tim Carroll, and Gregory Doran, and onstage talent such as Dame Harriet Walter, Anthony Scher, and Mark Rylance, no less. But there's a project that Alex has been involved with for the last 10 years and one that he is intensely proud of, as you'll be able to hear when you're listening to him. The Factory is a theater company like no other. No sets, no props, no blocking, no set cast, no auditions, open rehearsals that the public can come to. You name the theatrical convention and they are tearing it down. And they are about to start a run of Macbeth where the audience gets to play the witches. That's right, you can get involved. They encourage you to visit their website, download the relevant pages. You can actually pick your lines. They will issue lines as well. I mean, you get to participate in the play, but you got to learn your lines. You got to know your cues, learn your lines. Listen, I could go on and on about how crazy, inspiring, and genuinely unique The Factory is, but I'm just going to let you know by listening to this how Alex and friends came to create The Factory and how you can see them later next month at the Crouch End Festival. And just to warn you, this episode has some swearing. We don't often do it, but we let it slide this time. So if you're in an office or if you have children or you have children in an office, you know what to do. Have a listen. Alex Hassel, yeah?
Yeah.
Thank you for inviting me in.
Thank you.
It's great on moving day for you. It's amazing. Why I'm here is because, you know, we kind of ran into each other and you started talking about The Factory and what you guys are up to. And it's just fascinating. I knew nothing about it other than I knew the name and I knew that you and some of your colleagues were kind of doing something that was quite unique. And when you started talking about it this week, I just thought, oh my God, I've got to let people know about it. It's insane what you guys are doing. And I mean, before we get there though, let's just back it up. We met you a couple of times, you know, when we were doing our book. We saw you in Henry V.
Yeah.
And
Death of a Salesman. And Henry IV as well?
I don't think we did Henry IV. But so, and that's kind of when we found out a little bit on the radar what you were doing. But you know, how like we could do an origin story if you want.
Let's go.
You don't know. We've just been moaning about. We've just been moaning about how we haven't worked.
We'll get to the moaning. We'll get to the moaning in a little while.
Yeah, but okay. Let's talk about the glory days,
the dreamy origin beginnings.
Yeah.
It's a kind of quite a sort of an amusing and sort of twee story, but basically I had no idea I wanted to be an actor at all. I was 12. I mean, who does know really what they want to do then? I was living in Essex, which is where I grew up, and I went to see, I don't really know why, went to see in this tiny theatre called the Cranbourne Theatre, a musical called The Rock Nativity, which is by the people that wrote the theme tune to Neighbours. So
it must have been good.
I have subsequently, in fact, I am on the recording, a CD recording, singing of The Rock Nativity.
Oh,
from
my
a
Lord.
Weird, like, I don't know how I ended up doing that. But anyway, went to see that.
Yeah.
And just sort of instantly went, oh my god, I want to be in biblical
the rock nativity too.
Yeah, I think it was the thing. I think it was sort of elementally as simple as there being two groups of people in a room, one group looking at another group, and I thought, I want to be in the group being looked at.
Yeah.
So then I sort of looked in the local paper for what was like a group that was doing stuff, and there was auditions for Bugsy Malone, which was like my favourite film at the time, and I auditioned and got the part of Bugsy Malone. I was like, right, well,
I'm going to nail this. I've made it.
And had an amazing time doing that. And I remember actually one really sort of informative moment is that Blousy in one of the scenes was late for costume malfunction or whatever. And I improvised by myself on stage and like got a laugh. And that was like, oh, right, I feel powerful in some way. And then actually to get onto the moaning, the next thing that the company did was Oliver. And I was like, well, I just played Bugsy. I'm going in as like the Apple Dodger or Oliver or something like that. Yeah. And I sang the Where Is Love song in the audition. And they laughed at me because they thought my singing was so bad. And I went in the car with my mum and cried my eyes out. And I didn't get either of those parts.
There you go.
Which is there you go. That's the business. You're going to learn right at the beginning.
So that's
how it started. I
was in an audition for, was it Smokey Joe's Cafe or something like that? It was just like the one white guy in the show, and I was singing Ruby. I want you singing that, and I was like, yeah, I'm doing it right here. I was just come off of doing like Elvis the Musical, doing Buddy. And kind of, I'm in the rock and roll music with it. And so they had me sing the song a couple of times. And then they kind of went, John, could you be, and they couldn't have been it. I just went, what, better? And
possibly I can't.
When they all left, I thought, that's what they wanted to be. To be was better. I think that's the last time I auditioned for a rock and roll musical.
Oh, man. Well, the Rock Nativity will come around again soon.
There you go. Okay, cool.
Let's get it on the factories next year.
Excellent. Exactly. So you went to, did you go to drama school?
Basically, in Essex, all there was were musicals. So I did tons of dance lessons, ballet, tap and jazz, and singing lessons. And I did actually end up singing rather well in the long, over time. I did like tons of musicals and then started to go into London when I was about 16 to the Junior Guild Hall, and started to get into Shakespeare, which was a massive thing for me. And then at school in the sixth form, we directed Hamlet, co-directed Hamlet, and I was Hamlet. And that was, again, a sort of massive awakening, I suppose, artistically, to feel that I felt I had some understanding of what I was saying, which seemed, again, made me feel like powerful, and that something was sort of moving through me in a way.
It's very good to get that at a young age. To feel the power of those words.
Yeah. Although I remember my dad came to see it and gave me a note which was that I was just shouting too much. Which was a really good note, especially in Shakespeare. So I took that on board.
Yeah.
But so then I considered dance school and all that, but really I wanted to be a straight actor, classic actor, a non-musical actor.
Mm.
So auditioned for three drama schools, didn't get into any of them except Central, and went to Central, which I was very happy about.
Yeah.
And had a really, really, really good time there.
Yeah.
And had a fantastically talented year. And we just got, you get to act all the time.
Yeah. Which,
and people are better than you. Whereas a lot of the time, I think when you start out, you're kind of the best in your local group, although the local group was really good actually. And to have people be like, oh man, I'm not as good as that. I need to work much harder.
But that just makes you want to get, because that's what happens when you get on set, you get on stage, is that it raises your game. It makes you want to be better.
I mean, that's the thing. It makes you nervous to work with people that are much better than you, but it makes you better. Of course it does.
Mm.
For me, the existence of Marlon Brando will always make me try and be better. For me, he's the god of acting. And until I am as good as he is, I will work very, very, very hard.
Yeah.
Great.
I must put someone like that. So then you kind of, you just started working straight out of drama school. Did the musicals go by the wayside?
I joined the National Youth Music Theatre just before drama school.
Right.
And with Sheridan Smith and Mike Gibson and Gina Beck were now like big West Endy stars.
Johnny
and Olivier. I was singing with them, like as in I was one of the main parts as well.
You could just say that you were the inspiration for.
Basically, I taught them everything they know. But they were clearly much better than me. But I had a brilliant time in all that. So I actually continued to do that just out of drama school, and I think in the third year we did Sweeney Todd, and I sang in that as well. But I would be up for, although I have less confidence in my voice because I got a bit bullied at the NYMT by one particular actor and sort of lost my confidence in my voice a bit. But I do like singing a lot and would be interested in doing like an acting musical, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you've got your guitar and your...
I can't play the guitar. It's just there.
Oh, is it?
I got like when I was about...
Don't tell me like it was came with the house.
Yeah. When I was about 16, I was like, right, I'm going to learn the guitar. Yeah. And I can't like throw a guitar away. So it's just there making it look like I play guitar. But, so I like finding parts too difficult.
Mm.
And I think there's lots of musicals that have extremely complex parts.
Yeah.
But the bit that I would find really difficult would be the singing. And that I like to see a part and go, God, I don't understand what the hell is going on emotionally and sort of psychologically. And I'm not sure I'm good enough to do that. That's what sort of turns me on. So I think that's why big, juicy, complex, theatrical, roles rather than musical roles are
things like gravitated. Henry?
Yeah, sure. And Biff? Yeah, no, absolutely. Just, no, I've been very lucky.
And Biff is like, I mean, Biff is such a complex... I mean, I think it's one of those roles everyone talks about Willie, you know, but Biff is this...
The whole family are incredibly complex. For there to be no discrepancy in their mind, to be able to exist at exactly the same time, one thing, and it's complete opposite, and there'd be no sort of difficulty in them, in that, you know, a lie and a truth being, having as much validity in their minds
is
the sort of core of it.
I mean, look at the state of affairs in the world today.
Absolutely.
So you've done, moving forward, you've done theatre, film, you've had a really good crack at it.
Well, that's very interesting, and I appreciate that from an outside point of view. It might look like that. It's interesting, isn't it? Yes, I have done loads of really varied work, and when I think about it, I'm very grateful and very proud. But I think it's difficult for me anyway. I'm always, and it's not like I write those things off. I am very proud of a lot of the work I've done. And very much enjoyed it, but I'm always going like, but I want to go over there. Mm. I want to do more of that. But I had done lots of varied stuff. I've more recently got into more complicated roles in TV and film, and that's been really exciting because I know much less about that. I feel, I've been in theatre since I was 12, and I have a theatre company, and I've directed and do direct in theatre. And I guess I felt from a very early age some innate understanding in my bones of something about theatre. Anyway. Mm. Obviously, there's always lots to learn, but to some degree, I think I'm a theatre beast.
Yeah.
But I've always really, really loved films and TV as well. I don't go to the theatre ever. We never watch.
Well, it's like a Busman's holiday, isn't it?
I never go to the theatre, but we watch films all the time. Yeah. I'd like to direct films and I'd like to write. But I know much less about it. And in fact, in terms of acting, I've really through my work and through the factory and working with Tim Carroll and Mark Rylance at the Globe and all that.
Yeah.
Well, that was a real awakening of what I wanted my acting to be. I have worked very hard on being very live and responsive and very much with, impulsively and alively make up what's happening depending on what the other people around you are doing, And it's been very interesting to get onto set of, TV and film and go like, oh, right, I can't even see you.
Yeah.
And like, you're just a taped cross on the side of the camera. So what do I do now? What's the task? That's been really enjoyed having to learn all of that stuff. Been reading loads about it and watching, like actually studying people's performances. Mm-hmm. I've been like watching films and writing notes about what they're technically doing and trying to understand that. And that's been a real pleasure. I just read that really brilliant. Is it The Secrets of Screen Acting? I think is that what it's called? It's really, really useful.
Right.
Really interesting. And Michael Caine's book, which is hilarious, but also does have interesting stuff in it.
But yeah, to go back to a sort of varied, varied career, it's interesting. Yeah, I feel the factory has been such a... So that's 11 years now we've been doing it, and it's... I have wavered over lots of that time. It's like, oh, I can't sustain it. It's too difficult with an industry. And also, like, it's a lot of responsibility and, you know, I don't really want to be really successful, you know, in the industry and stuff. But then to have something that is purely artistic and really my taste, you know, it's... I am the artistic director of it, and we... It's very... we all... Everyone pitches in. It's, you know, as sort of democratic as it gets, I guess, other than that I'm totally in charge.
It's good. It's well, listen, let me take you back, because...
Yeah.
And, I mean, you mentioned it. Like, okay, you went and saw Rock Nativity.
Yeah.
You became very proactive. Now, it sounds to me like you're somebody who just likes to get things done. Like, you want to be busy. You have to have your hand in... I mean, it seems to me like you've...
I'm not very good at waiting.
Exactly.
Give me things.
So, you start a company called The Factory, as you say, 11 years ago. And, you know, what was it that made you start... I mean, first of all, what is The Factory, and what made you kind of come up with it or start it and enroll your friends and colleagues and workmates and professionals that...
Well, so a guy in my year, Central, Tim Evans, we were really, really good friends. And he was living with his mum and dad, I think, in Hereford. And I had a business idea. And I was like, why don't you come live with me in London and we'll try and do this business idea that involved acting and stuff anyway. And he had a theatre company, had just done a one-man show that was really, really brilliant. So anyway, he came and we chatted, and he was like, well, why don't you be part of my theatre company? I was like, well, if we're going to do a theatre company, I'm not being part of your theatre company. Like, you know, we're going to
be part of mine.
Well, no, but we'll and we were equal, you know, we were both the artist directors. So we talked for like 6 months about why have a theatre company? Does the world need another theatre company? What do we want to do? And we were both kind of angry at the time. You know, I had just done The Tempest at the Globe, which was Mark's last season that Tim Carroll directed, and it was just three of us, me, Ed Hogg, and Mark Rylance played all the parts, and there were three dancers and six singers. And that was just one of the most profoundly amazing, eye-opening, like, paradigm-shifting experiences for me. And Tim and Mark just blew my mind. And Tim Carroll's work in particular, how he thinks about acting and theatre, I just desperately wanted more of it anyway. So, and yeah, so I had been doing work and was really excited, but then, you know, came out of that and then didn't work. And I was like, I want to keep that level of challenge and that level of, you know. So basically, we just talked about what we didn't like about the theatre, what upset us, what made us angry, the fact we felt shut out of it, or, you know, it can be a very... it can feel like a closed shop. You feel like you're constantly sort of banging on doors. So we were like, right, we want something that feels like a community and that feels open and loving and healing and supportive and non-hierarchical. We want it to be really, really difficult. The work to be really, really difficult so that you constantly feel like you're testing yourself. We want it to last for a very long time, so you're always acting.
Yeah.
And even if you don't have a job, you're still an actor. Yeah. And you're still being part of it. We don't want to spend time trying to raise money, because neither of us have any skill at that or any desire to do that.
And it's a soul-destroying exercise. It's just horrible.
And also, our theory was, if we have to raise money to be able to do something, we'll spend all the time raising money and a small time doing the thing. Yeah. So let's not need money.
Yeah.
Let's get Tim Carroll on board if he's up for it. And he was. So it was born out of that. And out of that, those sorts of that ethos, we were like, right, let's do Hamlet, because that's really hard. Mm. And I had an affinity with Hamlet from doing it at school. And Tim Carroll had just done this version of Hamlet in Hungary, in Hungarian, where people swap parts and the audience brought random objects with them. I can't remember if it had props or set. I think it did have set. I mean, rather costume. I think it did anyway. But we were like, well, if we can't pay anyone, because we're not going to try and raise money, let's have nothing.
Yeah.
Let's have absolutely nothing. So let's not have a set. Let's not ever let's not do a run in a building, because that costs money.
Yeah.
Let's not pay people. Let's not have anything at all. So if we're not paying people, we can't possibly get people to stick around and do a run, because they're going to need to get jobs and go off. So how do we do that? We all swap parts. Okay. Awesome. So we have lots of us in it, and if you have to go away, the show won't stop.
Out.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Yeah. That's part of the pleasure of it, because the other thing we wanted is it to be very live and spontaneous and difficult and changeable. So those sort of things came together as a perfect combination of meeting all of our needs. So really it was about the parameters of necessity forcing us into a creative sort of position. So then that was the kind of artistic, like, playing of the play side of it. And then the other side of it is what the company is, I guess, which was more me and Tim's side, Tim Evans' side, than Carol's side, because he was in charge in the rehearsal room, you know, like we were just actors.
Yeah.
And so then that was like, well, let's change venues all the time, because we can't afford, you know, anything else. And actually, if the aim is for it to be really different every time, let's try and change venues every time.
Yeah.
We don't have money for advertising, so let's throw a massive party and get people to give us a venue and some drink and stuff for free, and get people to put their email addresses into like a ballot box, basically, like they were voting for Factory. So we would start building an email list. We rehearsed for like a year, and loads of, you know, as soon as actors get wind of, you know, like their friends saying, I'm in this company, this really weird and hard and awesome. They're like, well, I want to be there. We got loads of people involved, and also lots of people wanting to know what we were up to. And they would sign up for the email list and stuff, and we had Facebook, and I think Twitter wasn't around quite yet. But we wanted it to be kind of punk. We wanted... there was a big part of it at the time, which was anger, and it was like, fuck you, industry. Yeah. Fuck you. Yeah. If you won't have me play Hamlet, fuck off. I'm going to be my own fucking Hamlet.
Yeah.
So there was a sense of, we're going to break the rules. We're going to try and take our ignorance of how theatres are run and how companies are run as a virtue and be punk. Radiohead has always been a huge influence to me, and at the time Banksy and stenciling and graffiti and all of that stuff was a big influence. So we take it out of the hands of the industry. So we would give the information about the show on the Monday for the show on the Sunday, and we would only release them one at a time. First of all, we played to three shows, because there were three people playing every part. We'll do three shows so everyone gets a go. That was just invited audience of our friends and family, because they're like, what have you been doing? And we were like, if this works and is interesting, then maybe we'll keep doing it. And if not, then it hasn't been a waste of time, because we've all had a good time. And I was, of course, as is always the case at the Factory, I got a job and wasn't at the first shows, except the last one. And it was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Very raw, very, very raw, very wild and messy and chaotic and spontaneous. And we were like, well, that's cool. So let's next week book another venue, very small places, you know, 15 people, you know. And we'll charge £10 on the door, because we didn't have any, like, I don't think we had a website. Nothing. And like, we sold that out to like 20 people, and we're like, okay, well then let's next Sunday do one for 25 people. And we sold that out, and then we played every Sunday basically doing that, and a year to the day of the first show, we sold out the Globe at a midnight matinee. All word of mouth. And it was the worst show we did ever. The one at the Globe was the worst one ever. It was my birthday. So a major thing I forgot to mention is that the audience would play scissors, paper, stone to determine who played who.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we turned up not knowing who we were going to play.
Amazing.
And they would bring random objects with them, and that we would incorporate them into the show in a kind of, someone called them like a talisman, like a talismanic way anyway. And we had like, people brought their kids and their pets, and like, you know, we famously had a baby, my nephew actually, in the show. And yes, so this show at the Globe, it was my birthday, you know, it was my company. Everyone I had ever met was in the audience, and I lost the task to play Hamlet. It was so difficult.
So who did you play then?
Played the ghost, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. But then we would do crazy, crazy shit. Like, Tim Carroll really pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. It was largely, the idea was largely based on The Five Obstructions, a film by Lars von Trier. Right. So each act, we would have an obstruction. And off to begin with, it was just, we'll move the audience. So the audience in the first act will be in like a traverse. The second act, we'll do it in the bar. The third act, there will be front on. Fourth act will be in like a garden around the back. And, you know, the fifth act will be on a ladder or something. But they got more and more and more complicated to like push us and push us and push us out of our comfort zones, and the sort of better we got at it. And sometimes they would destroy shows. And some shows were just terrible. but they were only £10.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's
the point.
The point is that we're taking a massive risk.
Yeah.
And if there's one moment that is profoundly, uniquely, serendipitously interesting, that's worth £10.
Yeah, of course.
So
that's carried on. That
was Hamlet. Yeah. Well, that is the company is the. I guess the main ethoses is of the company are about taking the creative onus for yourself.
Right.
You being in charge of your creativity,
having a responsibility,
and having responsibility in the moment, and like you, there is no direction.
Yeah.
Like it's sort of like coaching, I guess. So I'm the director of Macbeth. There is no blocking of any kind. There are no decisions of any kind. We create the rules of a game, is what we call it.
Okay.
We try and work towards what is good playing of that game. And then you do whatever occurs to you. So you are making all of the decisions yourself.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting how long it takes actors to go, what, really? I can do whatever I want.
yeah.
As long as like it's in the parameters of these things that are good.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
And not masturbatory and not about your ego. It's very egoless, this sort of stuff. Yeah, so the company's based, on that sort of spontaneity, that you taking the creative onus of not spending any money on anything else, really, so that it forces us to be really creative and light and, you know, light of fleet of foot in terms of the shows. The audience being involved and, like, basically building into the game of each show things that will mean that we cannot control what's going to happen. So in Macbeth, the audience play the witches, and we're playing more and more with what that means.
Yeah.
I'm just going to shut a window because I'm getting cold. And how they can influence the action and, you know, make us rethink what we're doing in the moment, and what I'd like, and what a big part I think of the company is, and why people love the company, is that we are just us.
Yeah.
We're not playing characters. We are saying and trying to mean the words of the characters, but there is no characterization at all.
One of the things that people like to see is that you have a group of people who are trying to come into a room and accomplish something.
Yeah,
that just like they're just themselves. Like they come in and go, right, we're gonna try to do Macbeth here.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah.
You know, we're going to commit to this. We've entered into a contract. You guys are going to sit down and help us out a little bit. You know, and I think that's something really, when you were describing that the other day, that really just caught me.
I really like, and I think it's really important, I talk about this a lot in the company and in my life, I think about it a lot, vulnerability is extremely important and is implicit in human nature. I think as actors a lot, we try and, because it's really scary and hard being an actor and getting up in front of loads of people, I think a lot of acting work, seems to me, comes at it the wrong way and is about arming yourself against vulnerability.
Yeah.
It's about creating, you know, I've done shows in which I think I need to be incredibly different from myself, like Biff, for example.
Yeah,
you know? But I think some people can think of creating character or rehearsing as putting armour on to protect yourself from the unknown and from vulnerability. And to me, the opposite is the idea, is to open yourself up constantly, to get out of the way of blocking yourself.
Yeah.
Or sort of. So what I love about The Factory is that emotional responses, for example, are genuine.
Mm-hmm.
If people cry, they are actually crying.
Yeah.
You know, if they're shouting, they are angry.
Yeah.
And we're trying to upset and hurt each other because that's the play, you know. And also, because the audience know that this is totally made up, and they're part of it, you know, as well, they're being brave too, that the idea of what success or failure is different. Because seeing an actor die on their arse is interesting. And the audience tend to be very open-hearted, because they see that we're really going for something, you know, and we're trying not to be doing it based on being impressive or having an ego. It's about really trying to commune together in something. So Scott Brooksbank, who's a massive part of The Factory, said this brilliant thing about trapeze artists, apparently, that, you know, you go to the circus or whatever, and pretty much the trapeze artists could do every single show without a single mistake, but they don't. They build in a mistake early on so that you're like, oh my god, they're going to fall and hurt themselves. So then the rest of the act, when they do these amazing things, you're like, oh my god, how did they do that? And we don't build that in, we don't fake that, but that is implicit in the shows, in that stuff doesn't work.
Yeah.
So when things do work, it's all the more kind of magical and amazing.
That's pretty cool. Like, the wilderness, you guys were doing wilderness.
We did Hamlet particularly. So Hamlet was our first show, and we really built the company around Hamlet. And because it was about people bringing random objects and us incorporating them and stuff, we took that to be about venues and stuff as well. So we played really weird venues, like a sewage pumping station, as well as theatres and stuff. Yeah. But we played, you know, like music festivals, bars, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But yeah, we played one at Wilderness where I think we started at midnight or something. And the audience were just off their faces. I mean, a lot of us were stoned and everything as well, because we would play the room that we're in was the idea. So if you're in a bar, you play the Elsinore as a bar.
Yeah.
So it's weird because it's sort of sight non-specific because it changes every time. Yeah. But we try and make it sight specific in the moment, but we don't plan anything. You just do that. So we're in a festival, you know. So Rosencrantz and Whitey, like full on Whitey, which is sort of perfect and amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the audience were on acid and stuff. And the idea is that you envelop everything that happens. You know, everything that happens in the room or around you is happening.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot, you know, the idea of the fourth wall is that you block out anything that is not appropriate or useful.
Yeah.
We think, again, the opposite, which is born out of working at the Globe, the ethos of the Globe, is that you let everything in. That's the pleasure of it. So one brilliant, brilliant example of the amazing serendipity that can happen at the Globe and in the factory, things like that, was when we were doing the play within the play, and Lucianus is poisoning, or about to, we were about to get to that bit of poisoning the king. A guy fully dressed as the devil, like with his red skin and everything, walked in. So he just grabbed him and like he sort of involved in it. Someone said, I had forgotten this, but someone came in and started being really leery. So I think I rugby tackled him, apparently. So I was like it would get really dangerous at times. I remember like a different show, Jimmy Garnon, James Garnon, who is a huge, he was one of the original Hamlets. And he was incredible at props. He just made me weep with what he would get sort of thematically out of these props. Anyway, one show I made him be blindfolded. In this tiny venue, Baron's Court Theatre, I think.
Yeah.
And he smashed a mirror into the audience. And it was like, I'm sitting there as artistic director, like an insurance, you know, insurance going, oh my God, oh Jimmy, oh my God. And like, the audience are just like, you know, they sort of think that we're doing it on purpose or something.
That's great.
We had a habit of breaking everything for a while, but we've got out of that, luckily.
Very good. That's brilliant. I mean, it sounds like a really holistic, organic way of growing a company.
Yeah.
Getting the people in, and now you're about to play the Islington Theatre Festival?
No, so Crouch End, Crouch End Festival.
Crouch End.
So, Crouch End Festival, not even Theatre Festival, Crouch End Festival.
Okay.
So, to very quickly get us up to that date, so we did Hamlet, and then we did an improvised version of The Seagull, where we would all learn the sort of beats, I guess, of the play and just make it up.
Yeah.
And then we did The Odyssey. No, before that we did a new play, Boiling Frogs, by Stephen Bloomer, which I directed, and a new writing festival called Round 2 that we then ran at the Electricity Showrooms for about a year, which was getting writers to write pieces that anyone in the factory should be able to play any part. So they would completely change depending on who you had. Like the sort of interpretation of what was happening would be completely different depending on who was playing it. The Odyssey, and we always have gone to do like one-off theatre, Shakespeare's in this place in Wales, that we don't rehearse, we just learn the lines and sort of get together and do it anyway. So now we're doing Macbeth, and now I'm directing. So Tim Carroll runs the Shaw Festival Theatre now, in Canada. Tim Evans, we parted ways a number of years ago now, so I'm now directing everything, which has been a big change, a big step, and I love it. So it's exciting to do. Macbeth is a new one. We've done about 8 so far. And we're about to play 7 venues in 7 days at the Crouch End Festival from the 10th to the 17th of June.
Nice.
7 o'clock.
It's 7 consecutive nights?
We don't play one of them, but...
It's
like Sunday to Sunday.
Right.
Like, yeah, so...
But and is it in tradition with your... ethos as a company in different places every night?
Yeah, so
right.
they're I can't remember what the order of them is, but the Crouch End, the town hall there, has these amazing spaces. So we're playing, one is, I think the first one we're playing is this long, thin, wooden committee room, mm-hmm. With like parquet flooring and wooden, you know, all around us, which is really long and thin and will be really weird and has these great doors so you can do stuff outside and stuff. Anyway, so that's, we could get, I don't know, 100 people in there or something. And then the next one we're playing there, which I can't remember when it is a council chamber. So it looks like a courtroom, right, basically. And so that's going to be really, really interesting and completely unusual sort of space to play in. And then the final show we're doing, which is the final one at the town hall and the final one of our run of this run anyway, is in the assembly hall, which is enormous. We could get like 900 people in there. Yeah. I mean, if we manage to sell 900 tickets, I will eat anything anyone wants to drink. I will eat the 900 all the time. Oh, that's a delivery. Oh,
delivery.
It's this absolutely enormous space. And then,
so that could fit like 900 people. But then, like the day before that, we're playing someone's house, and with an audience of 15 or 20. And then another day we're playing this medieval tower, which is smaller than this room. It's half the size of this room, and I think we could get maybe 15 audience in it, and the actors are going to just basically have to stand still, like it's so small. And then we play the Earl Haig Hall, which is old man's, what's it called, working men's club. And then we play a church, you know, like a proper full on church. So they're totally different. And the cast will change every show. There'll be different witches every show. We think we're going to try and get a choir to come and be part of it for one of them. And so they're going to, I mean, of course I'm working again. I'm not going to be there. I'm not going to be there or see any of them, which is just deeply, bitterly disappointing.
Oh, my Lord. You're going to have to have spies on the inside.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, what I feel so proud of is that it's extremely rare, I think, to see the same play by the same company in such massively varied venues.
With a varied cast
within a week.
Yeah.
And what's cool is that we only ever charge £10 plus booking fee, which I feel I have to say, which is like, I don't know, a quid or something like that. £10, because we want everyone to be able to come.
Yeah.
We would love to do it for free, but then we just couldn't exist.
Yeah.
And we can't really exist with £10 a ticket. Yeah. But for 11 years, it's always been £10.
Right.
And what is cool about that is that people come again and again and again and again because it's totally different every time, and they want to see. What's cool is they get to know us through our acting too, and they're like, Alex wasn't very good that night. I want to see him play this other part, or I want, you know, or we cross gender lines too. So at the moment, there will be three female Macbeths and only one male Macbeth until I learn it, which I'm going to do. So all of the parts cross gender lines. So people want to come back and see different versions of it all. So we're hoping that, you know, people will come at the beginning of the week and then come back. And
that's fantastic. I mean, I'm fascinated by that as an actor, you know, and as a director as well. And
some people hate it, I think. I think some actors hate it really strongly, I think. And I feel fine about that. Because certainly some actors see it and go, God, I would not want to do that. I really liked it, but that is just not what I want to do.
Yeah.
And some people just hate it because it doesn't, I don't know. Oh, well, some shows are not very good. I mean, I think that's important to say.
And others are. Hey, listen,
I've been in a couple. Of ours, I mean, as well, okay. But some of our shows are not very good, and some of them are the best thing I have ever seen. Amazing. You know. But the work is not to everyone's taste. Some actors and some directors are it's like an epiphany for them. They see that sort of work. And that other company's doing, you know, you go, I really, really want to be part of that.
Yeah.
So we've started to open our rehearsal rooms up to audiences.
That's so brave.
Really interesting because we felt, is it brave? And actually it's been a major part of what we've always done, really.
Yeah, but it's incredible that I'm sure that people have thought about doing it before, but no one's had the balls to do it because that takes balls. Do you think that's when actors and directors and creatives and anybody is the most vulnerable? Is in that room, that's a hallowed room where people aren't let in. But to, I think to I would love to go to, I mean, I love being in a rehearsal room anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think as a resource for anyone who goes to theater or is studying theater or
yeah.
or just is interested in art creation.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, that's an incredible thing to be able to do.
Yeah. Well, it came, again, out of necessity. We were going to try and get Macbeth on, and we had no money. Like, we had about 30 quid or something. Mm. And we were like, well, we need rehearsal space. How do we do that? And I was like, what if we sell tickets? Because people are really interested in our process of how on earth you end up making a show like that. So we were like, well, if we say it's a suggested donation, but we pay what you can, but we would suggest £10 because that's what the shows cost.
Yeah.
And actually, we see all of the work as being as valid as everything else, if you know what I mean. And then if we get like three people per thing, then we've paid for the rehearsal, you know. And it's been working amazingly well. And why it didn't seem like a leap really for us is that the aim of the company, and this is what Tim Carroll said right at the beginning, he felt, and this is all of his work, he works, you know, he feels this way in general, I think. He's like, why is it that my rehearsals are always better than my shows, he felt. And it's because live stuff is happening, accidental stuff is happening. Yeah. You know, it's really interesting to me that when an audience will applaud when someone drops a line or giggles or laughs, because that's what they want. They want the real stuff.
That's it.
Or drops a prop or something.
Yeah.
So he was like, well, how do I get my rehearsals to be the shows, basically? So to have that stuff open to people didn't seem that big a leap because we were already putting ourselves in the most vulnerable position in the shows anyway.
Yeah.
And what's great, because we involve the audience in our work anyway, it's brilliant to have an audience all the time. But also, it's been brilliant because we ask them what they think. They offer their opinions anyway, of their own accord. So, like, at really brilliantly fortuitous times, we were working on... There's, like, a whole movement thing in Macbeth, which I feel is in some way related to the subconscious or something. I don't really understand it, but for me, it is, anyway. Yeah. And we happened to have a Freudian psychoanalyst come. But she was like... I was just wondering if this would be of use. So we're like, oh my God, that is like so brilliant, useful. Yeah. So we learn from them, you know.
That's so cool.
And so it's been brilliant. And we got asked by a school to go in and just rehearse in front of 300 of them or something. A lot anyway. It wasn't 300, but. And so it's what's cool is that we're not doing a workshop. Mm. We involve them because that's useful to us and it's interesting, but we were just rehearsing and they paid us. You know, so it's really
that's great.
Been really cool.
So how do people find more about you? And
so the website is factorytheatre.co.uk,
yeah,
and on there is all the information about the shows,
yeah,
who we are, what we've been doing. Although we don't like to tell everyone everything because it's live and it should disappear when it disappears. So you'll probably go on it and want more information than you'll get. And you can sign up for, we call it Open the Doors, is the open rehearsal type thing.
Yeah.
You can sign up for that. And you can email us about if you want to be part of the company. We now sort of do, for so long we didn't know how to get people in the company because auditions seem like the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
But we do like workshop-y, audition-y things, I guess. Because I think in principle there's nothing wrong with auditions, it's just a lot of them suck. As in, are disrespectful to actors.
Yeah.
So we try and do ones that aren't, give everyone a good shot, you know, and give them a good chance of feeling like they've availed themselves as well as they can. Yeah. So you can sign up for that. And there's some testimonials about shows that we've done before, and like credits and things like that.
Yeah.
So that's how. And that's, you can sign up, because we're still just through Twitter and mailing lists and stuff. You can sign up to find out when Macbeth is next going to be on. But we've also just got c-macbeth.com. We did this yesterday. I'm just going to double check.
But that is your phone.
I'm pretty sure that is it. c-macbeth.com. That's a hyphen, isn't it?
It is a hyphen.
So that's where you can find out where the shows are on.
Sign up.
So please, everyone, do
and crouch
and
in.
Tell your friends.
Yeah, tell your friends. Yeah. Crouch in. I'm definitely going. I'm gonna check my calendar because I think it's great. I think this is exactly the kind of thing that people should see. People It sounds to me like it's an experience. And when I go to the theater, I want to see an experience. I want to like the set.
Well, we call it an experiment.
Okay,
you know, it's a theater experiment,
right?
Because then failure is also positive, you know. And it's interesting. Some people have got kind of angry at us for doing all this in the beginning, like we were all up ourselves or something, thinking that everything else was wrong.
Mm.
And it's like, we're not saying anything else is wrong. Yeah. It's just there's enough of that other stuff is covered.
Yeah.
You know, like a traditional version of Hamlet or Macbeth or whatever, with blocking and with costumes and with ideas and with interpretation. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. You see very good ones.
Exactly.
But that's being done already. So yeah. I think it's okay for us to do something else.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Last question. It isn't even relevant. Like, what's next for you? You're off to you say you're off to work.
Yeah,
but you know what? Well, if that's the case, like what? In the factory's terms as well. For you guys, that you got this run, it carries on.
Yeah,
and then you just kind of adding new productions or adding new things in rehearsal.
Good question. We are very very loose in our plans. You know, we try and kind of go with what seems to be the right thing at the time. So Macbeth, if people remain interested in it and come and see it, and you know, sort of vote for it by coming to see it, then and we remain interested in it, we'll keep doing it and try and grow it to the size of our audience. So if it seems that there's a lot of interest, we'll play bigger venues. You know? So I'd really like, you know, I'm very proud of it, and I think it's really really interesting, and I think it has legs, so I hope that it keeps playing, you know, and playing in all sorts of different venues and theatres and other sorts of venues all over town, and all over, you know, we've played in other countries and stuff too, so that'd be exciting. And then, the next thing I guess would be to then, there's always been this long idea of a rep, and we have done shows in rep before. We did Hamlet and the Seagull together, and or the Odyssey and Hamlet together, and I mean, there is an idea I have of having a building, which is a rehearsal room and theatre is the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's all daylight and, you know, there's no effects, there's no... So, like, the ethos of the building would be that there's no stuff.
Yeah.
And that you would end up having a rep. Yeah. So you could have Macbeth and, let's say, you know, Hamlet and the Odyssey and the Seagull and Round 2 and all that. So you'd have a full, like, complement of weekly shows, but the cast would massively change all the time, and people could come off and do work and go around and do
the things that people bring in. I think that we as a species like telling stories, and a person can tell a story standing still in the middle of a room, no props, no nothing, and have as much interaction engagement with the listener. I love what you guys are doing. I cannot wait to see that.
Thanks.
As we talked on and on.
I could talk, but listen, maybe
we'll do a part two, you know, when things are kind of over, and like do a little I don't know,
it all went terribly wrong. And this
what
is why. What was that part?
What was that?
Wank that you made me go
see. Oh my god, when you said it was experiment, you were fucking kidding. Anyway, that's good shit, dude. Alright, thanks you so much.
Thank
man.
You.
Alex Hassel, co-founder of the theater company The Factory, who can be seen at this year's Crouch Inn Festival performing Macbeth in different venues every night with a different cast makeup. So brush up your rock scissors paper and So brush up on your rock scissors and paper, and you can control the outcome on who plays what role when you go and see them. That's the truth. Rock scissors paper. Now, before we wrap up, if you are a theater professional, you need to head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, and away you go. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at Curtain Call. We'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast. Just get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me at john@curtaincallonline.com. It just leaves me to say a huge, big old thank you to Alex Hassel for bringing me into his house when he was getting deliveries, and thank you, Alex. It was great. Lovely flat. Backs on Alexander Palace. That's all I'll give away. As I mentioned before, The Factory's production of Macbeth is on at the Crouch Inn Festival in June. Get your tickets for a tenner. You can't beat that. Go to factorytheater.co.uk to find out more about Macbeth, how you can play a witch, go on, embrace your inner Elphaba, or some other theatrical witch, just channel it, and also how you can attend one of their rehearsals, which is surely something that you don't get a chance to do very often. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.